Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
If you're a movie buff, no doubt you have come across the work of Ralph Winter, the Hollywood producer whose resume includes films like Star Trek 3, 4, 5, 6, X-Men, Wolverine, Planet of the Apes, Fantastic Four, Inspector Gadget. He's even put a few Frank Peretti novels to screen too, The Visitation, Hangman's Curse. The interesting thing about Ralph is that despite that kind of resume, he's also a committed Christian. You won't find him making movies with Brady Bunch characters and neatly packaged Bible messages, though. In fact, he's actually more interested in movies that explore the grittier, darker realities of life. Why is that? Well, we'll find out, because Ralph Winter is on the line. Ralph, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Thank you.
Looking back now, we find that movie making wasn't a childhood dream for you at all, was it?
No, I'm a history major from UC Berkeley. It kind of fell into it, a kind of right time, right spot.
So for a while there, you thought you would be a youth pastor, and then you got this job making departmental training videos, is that right?
Yeah, it was corporate videos. It was industrial videos about training employees, and, you know, it was really fun, and for me, it became sort of my film school, you know, an interesting way to learn about filmmaking, learn about telling stories, and with a captive audience and having to demonstrate that you can deliver the goods. So it was a good environment.
Yeah. So at what point when you were doing that job did you realize, hey, maybe this could be my career path?
Well, I won some awards and I got some attention, and that was interesting. That began to be part of it. I did some stuff in the church. I did, you know, some volunteer projects, and, you know, you do those stewardship videos for a church, which are trying to be more persuasive, and those are difficult to do, and got some success in doing that. So it was, it was a gradual process. It wasn't an overnight thing. It wasn't an immediate blinding insight to do it. But yeah, I think it just was a gradual thing of understanding that it was fun to tell stories. And for me, the most important and fun part is how people react and seeing people that, you know, want to respond to a good story. That's fun. That's rewarding for any artist.
Yes, absolutely. Then you got a job at Paramount Pictures working on TV shows like Happy Days and Mork and Mindy. Oh, staples of my childhood, Ralph. Staples of my childhood.
Well, you know, it was they wanted to do video at Paramount Pictures, and they wanted someone who understood that, so I did. And I worked in post-production and did a good job and actually got involved in some of the feature films like Star Trek II. The Wrath of Khan, and in building relationships with those writers and directors and producers, they've invited me to leave the studio after that and come work for them on the Star Trek series of films. So that's how I, again, kind of right time, right place, got to escape from Paramount and get rehired by Paramount as one of the producers on Star Trek III.
Mm-hmm. So all the Star Trek films follow, and then the rest of the movies that I mentioned just before. Just for the non-experts among us, just explain the role of, say, director, producer, executive producer, just so we can all kind of fit in where you fit into the whole movie-making process.
The director is really the one who visualizes the script. They work with the actors. Their job is to tell the story and stage it, to figure out how to move the camera, how to build the action, how to physically tell the story. An executive producer, you know, can be a lot of different things in the movie business. In the U.S., it can be someone who brings financing, brings talent, helps get it made. Today, movies are very difficult to get made, so there's a lot of different names up there. Mm-hmm. But the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences this Sunday will award the Best Picture Oscar to the producer. That may be up to three people on a motion picture. And the producer is really someone who is the champion from the beginning to the end, someone who carries the flag, someone who leads the charge and brings that property across the finish line. So although there may be others that help along the way, it's the producer that is going to find the material, find the writer, hire the director, all the way through making sure the extras on the DVD and what the posters look like and how the picture gets exploited in all the markets.
Yeah, there you go. They really are, like you said, they really are the champion. They take it across the finish line. This is Open House right across the nation. Ralph Winter is with us, a Hollywood producer. We're talking about his career. Let's talk about the industry, Ralph. You were just mentioning before how it's hard to get films made these days. Tell me why. Why is it getting harder? I mean, we keep on hearing about the fact that it's very corporate now. It's very much driven by Wall Street pressures. Is that the reason?
Part of it. I think there's a very corporate nature to mainstream movies that demands a return on their investment and demands getting to the widest audience. So you'll see movies primarily from the studios that want to get that, what they call the four quadrant. They want to get to everybody, young and old, male and female. And that's part of what drives it. Part now in terms of getting it, it's hard, is that there's a retrenchment going on. Money is hard to come by. I think that reduces what's there. And I think our culture also is at a point where there's more and more options. There's more and more choices. You know, it's beautiful. In Australia, you can go to the beach. You can go on the web. You can play games. There's so many options for people today that it's hard to get people into the cinema to spend $10, $15, $20 to experience something that they don't already see on YouTube or some other form of entertainment. You know, games are becoming, for a younger audience, they're terrific pieces of entertainment that for $50 could entertain you for 50 or 100 hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of choices for consumers. And so, you know, something like Avatar becomes completely out of the box because it's fantastic entertainment. It's bigger than life. You can't do it at home, even on your 52-inch flat screen, HD, Blu-ray, hoo-ha, you know, system.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where you can see it going. I don't think it'll ever go away. We still got musical theater. We still have television is having a big resurgence. Plays don't go away. There's still that form of entertainment. I think people still like being in a dark room and being entertained, but I think it's getting harder and more selective, at least in the mainstream studio business, to do that.
Yes. I'd love to know people's thoughts on that too, actually. 1-300-40-2020, what do you like most about going to the cinema as opposed to getting a DVD out or just watching the telly or playing the Xbox? 1-300-40-2020. You know, we get this cliche around about as well, Ralph, that at the top of the Hollywood ladder, the business guys up there are just simply in it to make money, and they'll put basically whatever will work on screen that will actually get bums on seats. Is there truth to that stereotype? Is it exaggerated? Is it underplayed?
It's exaggerated. That's one aspect. I think, you know, all of the people I know that run the studios are very thoughtful. They feature themselves as artists as well. They want good entertainment. But make no mistake, they're in a business, and their corporate parents want to make money. But it's complex, and you try to find, you know, there's some courageous things that take place and trying to take a chance, but the audience tells you in a lot of ways what they're willing to do. So an audience loves watching, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, but they don't love him so much in a comedy. They don't want to see him making jokes and being funny. So it's, you know, a studio will take a chance and say, we want to be in business with Arnold Schwarzenegger as an actor, and so we'll take a chance on something he wants to do, and he wants to broaden his career. And some guys cross over, some don't. Robin Williams, as a comic, has been able to, talk about him today, been able to cross over as a dramatic actor. You don't think of him so much as a comic as a dramatic actor now. So he was able to do it, but there's plenty of other actors that have not been able to make that switch. And executives take chances on some of those things. Sometimes they get burned, and that's why you see some of these guys change out after a while, because Bill Mechanic, who used to run Fox when I was there doing the first X-Men, you know, people derided him and said, you're making a $75 million art movie. Well, in fact, it was opened a successful line of comic book movies for all the studios. And he took a chance on that. He paid for it with his job because of something else, and he got let go. But without somebody like that to take a chance and fight for those things inside of a corporate structure, we don't find advances to the business. Look what Jim Cameron's done with Avatar. He fought to get that made and get that money, and now it's reshaping how much everyone wants to make 3D movies.
So, Ralph, give us a quick rundown of your average day. I mean, I'm really fascinated to know how you do your job. I mean, from the moment you get into the office to the time you leave.
Well, you know, my day starts when I get up at 5:30 or 6, and I'm making phone calls back to New York or to Europe, trying to get that stuff out of the way before their day closes up.
Yeah.
And I usually go through 150 to 200 emails a day, so I try to pound out as many of those before I got to jump in the shower, beat the LA traffic, and get into the office. When I'm not shooting a movie, my day, you know, today I had breakfast with an author, a book that was we're trying to sell called Same Kind of Different as Me.
Yes.
New York Times bestseller. So I had breakfast with him in Beverly Hills this morning at 8:30. By 10 to 12:30, I was with my staff going over the different contacts and things we need to do to push forward all of our projects. And then we have a documentary in production called Cool It. We looked at probably 30 minutes of footage that we're trying to sell here at ICM this afternoon for my 3 o'clock meeting. We'll be at ICM here, my agents, talking about distribution, talk about independent financing on a number of projects to see how they can help us push things forward. And by 4:30, we're back in the car, heading back towards Hollywood, where the offices are, to finish off those phone calls till 7:30, 8 o'clock tonight, mm-hmm. when you can finally get agents and attorneys and executives on the phone when their day ends, and sort of see what else you can push forward. We have about 25 projects, and so every day we're finding, how can I move forward with this director or this writer, and who do I have to call to sort of make sure that everything is moving down that path? And then at night, I've got a briefcase full of screenplays that have to be read. I've got a number of DVDs, so I'll probably go to bed about midnight having read at least one or two of those screenplays, and then pack it up, turn it around tomorrow, do the same.
Boy, I feel exhausted just listening to you after that. That's quite something. This is Open House right across the nation. Ralph Winter, Hollywood producer, is with us. X-Men, Wolverine, Planet of the Apes, Fantastic Four, you name it. He's probably worked on it. And as a committed Christian, Ralph, I'm really fascinated to know how your faith then impacts how you do what you do. Let's start just in terms of just even taking on the kinds of movies that you take on. What role does it have to play with? Because as you mentioned there, you get a lot of offers and a lot of approaches. How does it shape what you do and don't take on?
Well, there's a couple of aspects to it. One is in terms of being hired onto a show, like a hired gun, or actually in the process of making the movie. What's important to me is how you treat people, and I think you have to be reflective of how God has changed my life, has to reflect on how I treat other people. If I'm destroying other people to create my success, not a very good indicator of what it means to follow Jesus or follow any person. You sort of destroy that credibility if you're crushing people in the past. Mm. So to me, it's about respect. It's paying a fair wage. It's finding ways, again, of being a boss who's after excellence, but not inconsiderate of how you do that with the staff and with a lot of people. So you can ask anybody that I've worked on over 25 movies, and they hopefully give you an honest opinion about what they think about me, and I'm open to that. I sleep well at night. I'm okay with that. I think also in terms of the material, I think I probably tend to find stuff that's a little darker. I'm kind of interested in that. I think that's where, frankly, most of the world lives, not in some happy Disney space all the time. So I'm interested in how those darker sides and elements of life speak to what's important, speak to redemption, speak to pointers to what the gospel is about and about hope. So yeah. I look for projects that have elements of that, and I might draw the circle out a little wider than some Christians and take some heat for that, and I'm okay. I made a movie in 93 called Hocus Pocus about witches, and a lot of Christians make a flack about making that move.
That's probably a good example, actually. Yeah, why? Because that was about witchcraft, and it was kind of a kid's movie. So what was your reasoning behind that?
Well, it actually wasn't that much about witchcraft, but it was about these witches. And when people criticized me about it, I said to them, did you actually see the movie? Huh. Did you see what the story was about? Because the story was about a boy who gives up his life for his sisters, and he does that because of what he believes. And the witches get their comeuppance. They are destroyed in the end. So what part of that doesn't point to what the gospel story is about in terms of redemption? And what part of that are you unhappy about with the witches who are destroyed in the end? And, people look at the surface of things. An Avatar, people are looking at the surface and saying, oh, it's pantheistic, it's demonic. What? Are you kidding? The story of Jake, who thinks he's working for destroyed legs and finds out he can have a whole new existence, and he's literally reborn? Are you kidding? What is that story about? What does that remind you of? To me, it's shocking how people want to take shots at things, but they don't think about, what the movie's about. And clearly the world is. That movie is going to exceed Titanic by $1 billion.
Yes.
People are yearning for what's inside of that movie. And that's why they go. They go to experience that.
Yeah.
And for Christians in particular to criticize that because they think it's demonic or it's pantheistic is like, that's like an elementary child criticizing that movie, it seems to me.
So you've touched on something that's really important there in the way that we have mature eyes to watch film. So often we do discuss, as Christians, to tend to skim across just the surface or maybe even the cover and not actually really engage in the themes and the ideas and the hopes and the longings of all the characters. There really is that aspect of actually maturely watching a film.
And, you know, the audience does that. They do that intuitively. They can't tell you and break it down and tell you the structure and the DNA that's a buried roadmap inside of how the movie works and doesn't work. They intuitively know what works, and they flock to what works because they want to experience. They want hope. They want those things. And we do a disservice, particularly as Christians, when we are not mature enough or disciplined enough to become educated consumers about what works and what doesn't work and why. We should be the people who are the people of excellence and of the process, the journey. That's what your faith is about. It's about a journey. It's about the process. It's not about the end result. The propositional truth that says that we got to come to a certain point and make a certain decision and that's all that matters, that's empty. Mm. Being a Christian is the journey and the relationship. That's who we are. And that's what, ironically, it seems to me, that's what movies are about as well.
Yes, absolutely. So when you are reading those various proposals and scripts late at night before you go to bed, what are the four or five, whatever it might be, qualities that you're looking for a good movie, whether it comes from, a script writer of faith or just simply any script writer who's got a good story to tell?
Well, it's got to be an engaging story. I got to engage in the first 20 pages. If I'm not engaged in the first 20 pages, I'm done. I think it's got to have, for me, the stories have to have a hero that is compelling, that I can't stop turning the pages. I want to find out more about who this man or woman is and what they believe and what they value and why they're doing the things they're doing. That's the kind of stuff that drives me to a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, in finishing a screenplay, I've got to have some kind of emotional response. It's got to move me in some way, either to laugh out loud and I can't stop, or to cry, or to be moved. There's got to be, I think, at least in the commercial movies I want to make, an emotional response.
Yes.
That's why people go to the movies. That's why my wife and I choose what we go see. We choose it based on wanting to have an emotional response in the theater.
Yes.
Those are the big primary things,
yes,
really, that drive me.
And of course, when it comes to Christian movies over the years, we've always seen those kind of movies that always have to have the nice, sweet ending where kind of everybody makes a commitment to Jesus and goes to heaven. So when it comes to kind of the core message thing, we've spoken to other actors and artists before and writers even about whether there should be a central message in a movie and whether it should be kind of used to communicate that central message. What's your take on that?
An old studio executive, when the Telegraph was still around, and said, "If you want to send a message, use Western Union." Movies aren't good at that. Movies—that's not what we're best at in a movie. Movies are about, again, the journey, not about the message. And I think we, particularly as Christians, we demean the audience by thinking that by having that explicit message in there, that they're going to appreciate it more. I think the audience is much smarter and realizes they're being preached to, and no one goes to the theater to be preached to. So there's always going to be an audience that, you know, the choir that does want to hear that message again and again. But in terms of reaching a wider audience, I don't think that's effective. I think movies are much better at asking questions than they are at providing answers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I think in the religious Christian environment, we're answering questions that no one's asking.
Mm.
It's even worse. I was in Korea meeting with a pastor, very large church, 20,000 people, and talking about why I'm there and commenting on a film festival and speaking at the church and all that. And he said, "We have some terrible Korean Christian movies over here. They just keep telling you the answer again and again and again." And I thought, "Oh my gosh, we're exporting the worst part of our Christianity.
Yeah.
We're exporting it into the movie making as well. This is crazy."
Yeah, and this is why it's so important to talk to people like yourself, Ralph, who've actually got all that experience in the storytelling world, and to hear this, I'm right there with you. So before we wrap up, a couple of things. the movies that you're proudest to have worked on and those that you've learnt something from and maybe, you know, would do differently next time?
I think X-Men 2, very proud of that movie. A lot of action, a lot of deep thematic things that the X-Men world is built on. Should we live together or should we live apart? How do we get along? Where do I fit in as a mutant? I think that's a relevant question of where I fit in, whether you're 14 or you're 74. I think Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home with the Whales, was one of our most accessible movies. It was fun to make. It was a good story. It was good science fiction, good time travel. We really enjoyed that movie, and the audience loved it. I think if that movie was made and out there today into the same box office, it would be, you know, a smash hit.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some of the things that I feel were not the best, Star Trek V, we somehow deluded ourselves because of the success of Star Trek IV into thinking we could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a movie about searching for God, and I think we fell into our own trap of trying to answer a question that no one cared about. And it's an easy trap to fall into, and I think we almost killed the franchise of Star Trek movies. And thankfully, J.J. Abrams has reinvented that franchise again wonderfully with his movie last summer. But it's, you know, you take some chances, you got to make choices, and it's a tricky business. It's part business, it's part art. It's not an exact science. The market share is always, you know, shifting around from one to the other, so
yes.
It's a tricky thing.
Yeah, you've got to learn from those mistakes, haven't you? You've got to learn from those things, and helps you to create better movies and improve on your craft as you keep on going.
Absolutely.
We keep on hearing rumors about the C.S. Lewis movie, The Screwtape Letters. Can you give us an update on that?
Well, every day we're trying to move that forward. Today we had a little bit of progress, just moving forward and renewing the option at 20th Century Fox. Had lunch with Doug Gresham last week, who was in from Malta, just keeping him on the same path with us. So it's a bit of a convoluted process. It's been a long journey. I feel like we're making more progress than ever right now, but it's going to be a while before it gets to the screen. It's going to take another couple of years before we can get it to the screen.
Okay, well, I, for one, am looking forward very much to it. I think it's one of C.S. Lewis's greatest books, and I can't wait to see what you do with it. Thanks so much for your time, Ralph. It's been great talking to you, and very, very, very inspirational and educational, too.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Ralph Winter, Hollywood producer, and what a wealth of experience, and some pretty amazing insights there when it comes to storytelling, particularly in the Hollywood filmmaking scene, but also, of course, if you're just simply interested in storytelling, the kind of qualities he was looking for in a great story. The Open House website has a podcast if you want to pass it on to a creative friend or so, openhouseonline.com.au.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.